Today on The Grave Talks, Evil Unearthed, The Monroe House, a conversation with Joe Vitale and Matt Benton. There's a house in Hartford City, Indiana, that locals whisper about, but few dare to enter after dark. Known as the Monroe House, it's earned a reputation as one of the most haunted locations in the state, a place where strange voices echo through empty rooms and shadows seem to crawl just out of sight. For more than 7 years, Matt Benton and his team dug into the house's dark past, interviewing witnesses, capturing chilling evidence, and uncovering a discovery in the crawl space that feels pulled straight from a nightmare. Ritualistic objects buried deep beneath the floor, as if the earth itself was trying to keep them hidden. Matt shares how 7 years of relentless research and hundreds of hours of footage came together to tell the house's story. Not just as a documentary, but as an immersive, dread-soaked experience designed to pull viewers inside the haunting itself. This isn't just another ghost story. This is an invitation into one of America's most sinister hauntings and a glimpse at what happens when something evil refuses to stay buried. Today on The Grave Talks, Evil Unearthed, The Monroe House, a conversation with Joe Vitale and Matt Benton. Joe and Matt, thank you very much for joining me today. We're going to talk about a film you guys did, a documentary. It's Evil Unearthed, and it's on Prime. And this is all about the Monroe House in Hartford City, Indiana. And I recently did an interview on Haunted and Paranormal Blackford County, Indiana, with Tim Norris. And Tim was telling me about the film. So I watched the film, and then I reached out to you, Matt, and to see if you would be on the show. And thank you so much, because I'm really excited to dive into this haunting and your investigation. So I'm going to start with you, Matt. How did you, because I love to know the answer to this, how did you get interested in the paranormal? Is this something that goes way back for you?
Yeah. So I was always interested in the paranormal because of my personal experiences as a child. And also I heard my mom's ghost stories and everything like that, because she used to live in a haunted house in Indiana. And so I was always intrigued by it, but it wasn't until the summer of 2011 when I went to the Old Washoe Club in Virginia City, Nevada. I heard about the Old Washoe Club being haunted, and I was like, oh, cool, I want to check it out. And then I went to the crypt, and I heard there was some spirit there, and I asked if there's someone there, can you please move something or make some kind of noise? And then literally 5 seconds later, a piece of brick is thrown, and that's what got me hooked.
A piece of brick?
Yeah.
That's aggressive.
That would literally have got 5 seconds after I asked the question.
Wow.
Yes, it could have possibly been something natural, could have been a coincidence, but it still got me started into it. So it was definitely interesting because it was in the crypt. There's bricks. It's a brick wall and everything, but it was definitely interesting. And maybe something fell off of the wall. I don't know.
Because if something falls, it goes straight down. If something's thrown, it goes at you.
And yeah, I didn't really get to see it, though, so we were in the dark.
Okay. Joe, what about you? How did you get interested in this?
Long story short, I wasn't interested in it. I was terrified of it. Lived in a home that had something bad in it. My grandmother, very religious, everything was a demon, would basically scare me. And I'm not even sure why she would even do this, but, oh, the devil can do this, the devil can do that. Made the devil sound pretty powerful, right? Which made me even more terrified. And just hearing her say, but there's Jesus, like, that's great. So I know the guy can walk on water, fed a bunch of people, turn water into wine. Anything else? Because not making me feel any better about the situation that we were in. So I ended up basically getting dragged into the paranormal when I was a younger teenager. I just was with a group of people who were much older than me, who had been doing the whole paranormal investigation stuff for quite some time. And they just brought me along. Just trying to keep a long story short. But, I mean, yeah, it took a little bit of time for me to get more interested in the paranormal. Like I said, I wanted nothing to do with it because, again, having a grandmother who's super religious
right,
just terrified me. So,
well, it's like you hear grandma's voice every time you go do an investigation. But, you know, I get it where you're coming from, Joe. I grew up in a haunted house, and I'm very fascinated by the paranormal, but I'm actually scared of it, too. And Matt, in fact, in the film, you're like, I'm not scared of this. And I'm like, how is he not scared at this right at this moment?
Well, when you do it for such a long time,
it's kind of becomes part of who you are, really.
Second nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's no longer paranormal for you anyway. Right. It's like the norm.
Now, did the two of you start Paranormal Research Unit, the investigative group, or was that started by other people?
It was started by me back in 2015 is when I officially made it, or maybe late 2014. And basically, I created the name. I was a part of two different teams before PRU. My first team was, I was 16 years old when I got into paranormal investigating. So very shitty name, but it was Paranormal Extreme Crew. It was the first.
No, actually, that kind of fits for when you're 16.
I know, right? That sounds like a 16-year-old made that name. And then, and then I went to another team that was not my team. It was Dante's team, Dante Reader, which was Soul Seekers. He was a part of the Paranormal Challenge TV show, and he won. And so I learned that he was in Temecula, California, and at the time I was living there. So I was like, okay, this is cool. So I hit him up, and then we did a little investigation together, and then we decided to work together, and we worked together for 2 years straight. This guy, he's the first person I've ever worked with or met that was actually serious about it like I was. So, because the first people I was with was just my friends. They weren't in it for the same reasons as me. Mm-hmm. They were in it for the thrill. I was more into it because I wanted to try and find more answers as much as possible. And then, so after that, there's some differences between us when it came to evidence. And also I moved to Indiana. So then I created PRU. I wanted to be in charge of what I put out there as evidence. So I wanted to run my own team again. So I was like, okay, I'm going to create another team. It took a while to actually have a team because I started in 2015. I didn't really have a team until 2017, I would say. And then it changed over time with crew members. And then now I think we have the best team that I've ever had to date now. So because a lot of talented people are now involved with the team. So
I think it makes a difference. Doesn't it make a difference who's on the team?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody brings something different, you know?
Yeah, it definitely makes a difference. And also now Joe, in some aspects, thinks pretty similar to me when it comes to evidence, and that I didn't have that with the other crews I was with in the past. So Justin and Joe were kind of in the same mindset when it comes to the paranormal in certain aspects. And so I think when we all have a goal and think similarly, I think that helps sometimes when you have a set goal. But we also have team members in the group that are, you know, maybe a little bit more on the believer side. Mm-hmm. We're believers, but we're also skeptical believers, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like we have to go through the evidence and find the natural explanation first. And if we can't find the natural explanation, then we finally go to the maybe it is paranormal, but we don't really know. So that's just how it is.
Right. You know, just because we kind of like think similar in certain aspects doesn't mean, you know, we agree with, you know, one another on everything. We do have our own beliefs. We see things a little bit different, but it makes it more interesting, and it brings more of a challenge. It's like, okay, well, prove it kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Justin and I are probably the closest and thinking pretty much alike.
But then you need someone who's not thinking like you to challenge your thoughts too, you know, so that's where the different viewpoints come together, right, yeah. I think, with a good team.
It's not good to just be in a echo chamber.
Right.
It's good to have other thoughts, beliefs, and things like that. I think that's important. And I think, you know, that's healthy.
Agreed.
I'll start with you, Matt. Who became fascinated by the Monroe House?
Yeah. 2016, I was trying to get access to the place. And I couldn't get access at the time. They only had it open to one team at the time. I saw some videos of this one group on YouTube, and I was like, oh, they caught some interesting things. So I was like, oh, this place looks very interesting. And there's something about it that was calling me in a way too. I just felt drawn to it. And so I was actually, for the first time, spoke to Mike on the phone trying to get access. This is before he knew me and everything. And then, so he didn't really accept my offer at the time. And so I couldn't get access until they officially opened it up to the public in 2017. And so that's when I was filming a different documentary idea at the time. It was called Man vs. Paranormal, where I was stuck in the three different buildings by myself for 3 days. And Monroe House was one of them.
When at the beginning of the documentary, when you talk about that, I got feelings about that. I was like, there's no way I could be locked in a place for 3 days by myself.
The worst part about it was the boredom, because I even gave my phone to Dwayne. So it was so boring.
There's nothing to watch. And it's not like when you go into a haunted location, even if you know it's a haunted location, there's not activity 24/7.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of waiting.
Yeah, it was a lot of waiting. And every time, what annoys me the most is every time I did Man vs. Paranormal, I always forgot to bring a book. And I kept saying to myself, I need to bring a book next time. Oh, I need to bring a book next time. And I keep forgetting it. I keep thinking about the equipment first, and then I totally forget the book every time.
It's like, so, I actually need like two or three books.
It's because it gets boring. It really does. When you want to take a break, you have like no entertainment. Well, I only did the no phone thing on Monroe House. I didn't do that with the other two places. So technically, I did have my phone on there.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
Joe, what was your experience with the house before this film?
The first time I went was actually 2017. And that's actually the first time I met Matt. I didn't know what to expect. I really didn't even hear, like, I knew nothing of the place other than just what I was being told. I mean, going there, I was a bit surprised. I wasn't expecting certain things. A couple of examples. I was working, loosely put, working with some other people filming for a show. And I went to go get B-roll footage. And every single battery just died. Like, I would be able to use a camera for a couple of minutes and then the battery would die. So constantly would get battery drain. Now, I was told that the batteries were recharged and they had been charging, but all of them. But at one point, I heard conversation going on in a room. And I thought that was kind of strange. I left my camera recording. I went out to, we call it like the main room, whatever, basically where we set up our equipment and stuff like that, and told somebody, hey, sounds like there's conversation going on in this room back over here. So she came with me, and I walked into that room, and something shut my camera off. The viewfinder was closed. When you close the viewfinder, that just shuts off the camera. And I'm like, this was left recording. I don't know what happened. We're kind of talking a little bit. The basement door was wide open, and we started asking questions. Then out of nowhere, like, this rush of cold air came up from the basement and just hit us. And I'm like, okay, that's just weird. Then, oh, yeah, the light. There was a light in the kitchen upstairs. It was on. And I thought, you know, one of us had turned it on. I know I didn't turn it on. As it turned out, none of us turned the damn light on. None of us knew how to turn it on. We were trying all the light switches and stuff, and we couldn't figure it out.
We did figure out later, but it took a while. And then it was like this metal thing, like old school, like metal switch on the light itself. So we have the regular switches, right? And then that's the ones we were playing with, and it wasn't working. So we're like, okay, what's going on? And then so we went to the one on the light itself, and so that was like a big mechanical light that just somehow turned on its own.
And that's not easy to turn.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was not. So it was definitely.
Yeah, not easy to find. You guys had to look for it.
Right.
Yeah, we had to look for it because we didn't even know what turned it on. And then we also caught the a camera moving on its own, too.
Oh, there's that as well. Yeah.
That same night. So that was pretty cool because, it was the first time that Joe and I met. Pretty much every time, not every time, I would say like 80% of the times I've been there, I've had some decent stuff. So
did you just collect footage then? You had some footage. And then over time, it was like, you know, we could put this all together in one documentary. Because this is 7 years worth of research and investigation. This isn't like y'all went in there for a weekend and this is what you got. This is a lot of time spent in the house.
Yeah, so basically when I was filming originally for Man vs. Paranormal, the film wasn't shot in the way I wanted, so I was deciding that I was going to probably scrap it, but I wanted to use the footage because we did get some good evidence.
Yeah, you did.
For that when I first did that. So I was like, okay, I want to use this. And plus the stick figure thing, too. I was like, come on, it has to be a movie. I did not release that on YouTube at all because I was like, I'm saving this for a movie because this has to be a documentary. To tell the story of this place. I just was waiting for a while, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with it. And then one day decided to finally go ahead and do the Monroe House as a documentary on its own because we were trying to come up with some other documentary ideas. And here's another thing that a lot of people don't know about is that the footage was a lot of the footage was lost because the hard drive crashed.
Yeah,
the hard drive crashed. And so we did like a little, like, not GoFundMe, but like a little live stream so the fans could maybe help donate to the hard drive and everything. And then we came up with the money because it was over $1,000 for this hard drive recovery because it was a lot of terabytes. And so they all helped out, pitched in, and then we had enough, and then I paid for it. And I was gambling because they told me a 50% chance it'd be a 50% chance for it to be recovered.
Get it back.
And sure enough, what the weirdest thing about it is, it's mainly the Monroe House and Revenant Acres are the two places that I got my recovered footage for. A lot of the other places were not, which I find very interesting because those are two places I was interested in doing videos on.
Yeah.
So I find that weird. But those are the things that properly recovered.
It's almost like they want their story told. You know,
it was a weird coincidence. I'll just say that much. I got the piece of footage that I needed so badly, by the way, because I had a lot of the Monroe House stuff, but there's one that was just too important. It was the footage of me crawling out of the crawl space with the stick figure. And so that footage was gone for a while until I finally got it recovered.
I'll be damned. Because I thought it was, number one, very brave of you to go into a crawl space because there is no way you'd get me into a crawl space. It's just for a number of reasons, but snakes, you know, mm-hmm. rodents.
Spiders,
all of the. Are you afraid of spiders? Was it in the?
No.
Okay. Well, you did say you're not afraid of really anything, which kind of
probably,
I was impressed.
Probably heights. Heights is the only thing I'm a little afraid of.
Just that crawling in there. That and to watch you going in there, I got anxiety, I got to admit. But can you talk about what you found when you were in there?
Yeah.
Or a little bit, because we do want people to watch the film. But
well, they kind of see it in the trailer.
Exactly.
But yeah, we go in there, find two different things. So yeah. I'll keep one of them as a surprise. But the other thing is the stick figure, which is like a ritualistic item. There's already been history of ritualistic items found in the crawl space in the past. So this is just adding to it. And going down there, you can see my reaction because I was like shocked. Like I was living a real movie moment, it felt like, during the moment when I saw that. And it was funny because Eddie didn't seem to know what it was. He's like, oh yeah, there's this thing over here.
Yeah, this is kind of weird.
And, like, and so it's because he's not a paranormal investigator or anything. He was trying to flip the house is originally what he's trying to do, but then a whole bunch of people were quitting when he was trying to get it flipped by some work contractors, and basically people were quitting left and right. And then he started having experiences. Then he called Dig Paranormal, and then the rest was history. Now it's a haunted attraction, blah, blah, blah. Long story short. So, yeah.
Well, I was just going to ask you about a little of the history of the Monroe House, because I think it's interesting. At the very beginning, you're walking into the house and you see what I think might be the old Blackford County Jail. It's a red brick building. Mm-hmm. You see that, like, it's kind of catty corner or something. And it's like, that looks like a really haunted building, like in the traditional haunted building look, you know? And the Monroe House doesn't, I don't think I would drive past and go, ooh, that's, so it's kind of surprising to me, all of the activity.
Well, haunted houses are usually just a normal house. So.
Yeah, you don't know. But I thought it was interesting because the one that looks super haunted, and then you're going into this one. And so I'm like, it just kind of looks like your regular house. What is it? You think that it does have history of people doing some rituals and things in the house that might have stirred up activity?
Yeah, it was. We found the guy that did the rituals. And on top of that, there has been deaths in the house. We show all that in the film. And I don't want to give too much information away, but yes, we do find the guy that did the rituals. And it gets clarified. So.
And there had been other people in that crawl space who had found things before you. How everybody kind of belly crawled past that item that you found. I find that very interesting.
I think it blended in pretty well because if it wasn't pointed out by Eddie, I don't think I would have seen it because I didn't even see it at all. I was just crawling by and he pointed it out. And so it sticks. So it kind of blends in with the environment. So I was looking more ahead because I was looking for something very specific because of the claims that were there. And then, yeah, so maybe the same thing happened to them. I have no idea, but
it does kind of look like wires, honestly. Like if you were in there and you just kind of were looking around and you may have seen it, but probably like, it's like electrical wires or something, and then just move on. So it doesn't surprise me, but it does surprise me that it was overlooked.
Yeah.
And one other thing I want to mention is that I would find it weird, like some people think, oh, what if Eddie put it down there? The thing is that when I first got there, I had to unscrew everything, at, like the entire board that was there. And these huge, heavy rocks were there too, that were up there blocking it. So it would take him a little bit of work to do all that when it's been blocked off for about over a year now by the time I went. It's been blocked off for about a year. And so, or half a year or something like that. No, it was a year because it was October. Yeah. So it was a year. It's been blocked off. So basically, I think he would have gone really out of his way to do that, but it's always a possibility. But I knew that stuff was there the first time I went. The first time I went, which was in, I think it was April of 2017. or March, one of those 2 months. I can't remember. Or May. I can't remember. It was one of the beginning-ish months. It's in the documentary. It's in the documentary. But anyway, it was one of those months, and I was there. It was the same exact situation. It was boarded up, screwed in, and rocks in the way. So I didn't go until October when he allowed me to get access, and I had to go unscrew it myself, and then I pushed down the rocks. And so, like I said, that would be a lot of work for him. He seems like an average guy.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he would want to be moving those big rocks because they were heavier rocks.
I don't know. Eddie's got some strength.
He does construction, so probably.
He's got some strength. But the thing is, too, is Eddie doesn't like being in the house.
He hates the house.
When you talk to Eddie, one of the things that you'll notice and other people notice who I've investigated with, who I taken there, and he's always looking, you know, over his shoulders. When he's talking, he's always looking and like he's paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time I was there and we heard what sounded like a cat in the kitchen. And he's like, nope, I'm not doing this. I'm out of here. And he started to leave. I'm like, I can't believe that just happened. Maybe it was a cat, you know, maybe in a crawl space or something like that. But I'm like, no, it's good, dude. Like, you know, stay.
He's freaked out.
Well, that's not the guy who's going to go into the crawl space by himself.
Right.
And plant something. What happened to that once the movie's all done? Did he keep it? Did it stay in the house?
No, it's not in the house at the moment. He took it to this one, what was it called? It was like this storage place that he had, and he says it's been falling apart, and he's trying to keep it. He's basically trying to keep it to where it's stays intact because apparently it's falling apart. And so I don't know if it's going to ever be there or not. I have to talk to him about it because he says he wants to display it, and he's trying to get like some art, something to keep it.
Yeah,
something artificial to keep it like its integrity or whatever, to preserve it basically. So he wants to display it and put it in there because he's trying to make it into its own museum now of the Monroe House. Even though there's a lot of things in there that doesn't even involve the Monroe House, but because there's like Ouija boards and other artifacts from other people that gave him stuff, dolls and stuff like that, but. And photos that don't even relate to the place, but whatever. So it's like he's making him to a haunted attraction, basically, at this very moment. So
thank goodness you were able to recover that footage.
I know, right? Because I was the only one that had it. Literally the only person ever to have it.
Because so I think this whole film would have been much different, or I don't even know if you would have gone through with the film, because that's an integral part of the film, and it kind of does give an explanation for why things are happening in the house.
Yeah, I would have been very disappointed if I lost that footage, because not only did I capture the A camera right there at that moment, that was also the video camera that caught the use something right after I get out, very weird thing that happened. Can't really. I'm leaving it up for
watch
you guys.
Watch the film. It's super easy. It's on Prime. I would highly recommend.
I was very disappointed about that because I had the voice the Zoom recorder audio, which also shows it, but I'm moving around with it, so you also hear me thrash like the friction sounds. With the Zoom H4n Pro, you hear it on both audios because it was disembodied. So it was definitely interesting for sure. The friction part ruined it, so it wouldn't have worked. I needed that audio too. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad it got recovered.
When you do a film like this or any paranormal documentary, it's not like you go in there for a weekend. Now, most people don't put the effort in to a film like you guys did and, you know, investing that kind of time. But it does take hours of footage to find one or two things. You know, and you might have it, you might not have it.
Exactly. And that's why it took so many years. And on top of that, I think we're the only paranormal documentary to ever do a long amount of years in a location. I think the only other location was like the Demon House, and that was like 2 years, I think it was, 2 or 3 years. Yeah, 7 years for ours. So I think this is the longest one, to my knowledge at least.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Matt Benton and Joe Vitale about their documentary film, Evil Unearthed. You can watch it on Amazon Prime Video, YouTube Movies, and Google Play. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. You can find everything there, all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.